tide is wrought. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon and welcome to Winds of Change. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it is my privilege, as I do on most Mondays, to be sitting here for Father Anthony, who, thanks to your prayers and your good wishes for him, is on the mend and looking very well. He just came into the studio just before I went on air, so grateful that he is on the mend, and grateful to you all for listening and letting me sit in for Father today. Today is October 29th. We are at the very end of Respect Life Month. And as you know, those of you who listen regularly, I have been featuring different pro-life topics and people as my guests this month. And I have saved the best for last because I have with me in studio today John and Cindy Morales from Pro-Life Champions and Shout My Story. And we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of different things related to their really wonderful pro-life work and their efforts to change the culture from a culture of death to a culture of life. So, John and Cindy, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Mary, great to be with you once again. Yes. in person.
No, John, well, this and Cindy, welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for Cindy. Come on, Cindy.
Thank you for having
us,
Mary.
Good to be with you. Good to be with you both. And I'm grateful to you for coming to be with me in studio today because we do have so much to talk about, and you've brought some wonderful audio clips and examples of your work that we're going to be going through. But as you know, I like to kind of start with why people who do pro-life work do pro-life work. I find that everyone is drawn to this kind of ministry for varying different reasons and as varying as people themselves are. So, Jonathan, I want you to tell the listeners a little bit about your professional backgrounds. Listeners, you have probably already discerned that John has a real radio voice, like a professional one. He has been professionally trained as a media person and as a radio person in particular. And so give me a little bit about your professional backgrounds and what you drew from doing pro-life work and then what drew you into it to begin with.
Well, Mary, I really do count my blessings that, you know, previously in my life, I spent decades working as a sports reporter and sports anchor for Fox Sportsnet Chicago,
right.
Here locally, covering
baseball,
the Cubs,
yeah,
Cubs,
right.
White Sox, Bears, Bulls, you name it. Prior to that, I spent 8 years in Detroit at the Fox station in Detroit, covering Michigan football and Notre Dame and you name it, the Detroit Pistons and Red Wings, and you know, spent an entire life working in the sports arena, and that was in the aftermath of having realized that I was post-abortive. In fact, it was early in my career in broadcasting that I was involved in an abortion as a young man, and it's part of the story. You know, the good Lord took me from that arena of sports broadcasting into the pro-life movement. I've come full circle because not only am I post-abortive from being personally involved in one when I was in my 20s, but I'm also very joyfully a adoptive father. Uh-huh. I am the father of my wife Cindy, and I are the parents of a beautiful baby boy that we adopted, and so he is our miracle child that landed on our laps from heaven, and he's part of the story. In fact, so much so that on our first project of the 40 film, which some of your listeners might be familiar with.
Listeners, if you're not, you should try and get a copy of the 40 film because it's just done on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. If you want a really comprehensive historical analysis of the Roe decision and its implications for the American legal system and also for American society, then get a copy of John and Cindy's film.
Well, thank you, Mary. Yep. And in the 40-film DVD, we actually have a segment on the making of 40. It's a featurette on the DVD.
Excellent.
And in that feature, we tell the story of my post-abortive experience as well as the adoption of Joseph, which has kind of been part of the inspiration, the motivation to do this type of pro-life work. So being, you know, having been personally touched by abortion and also by the joy of adoption, I felt compelled back in 2011, in anticipation of the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, to use my media background and create a beautiful documentary film called The 40 Film. And it came to me in prayer in front of the Blessed Sacrament at the Women's Center, the same Women's Center that has saved nearly 40,000 babies from abortion. In that chapel, that's where the inspiration came. And we've had some amazing experiences along the way since the film came out in December of 2013.
And so, John, you know, what I love about that is, were you aware that you were a post-abortive father? Did you participate in the decision, or was that something you were made aware of afterwards?
I didn't know what I was doing at the time.
Right.
I really, really didn't realize the effect of participating in abortion at the time. My then girlfriend asked me to pay for the abortion, of which I ended up paying for her, even though in my heart of hearts, even though I didn't understand the issue like I do today, I asked her and I begged her. I remember going down to one knee and asking her, please don't have an abortion.
Yeah.
And she absolutely insisted, and I ended up giving in. It left a hole in my heart, and it touched me profoundly for decades. I remember going to ballparks in my travels as a sportscaster, and seeing fathers with their babies, dads with their cub baby uniforms, and thinking, I want that someday. I'd love to have
and
it.
And God gave it to you.
And God absolutely
answered your prayers.
Absolutely answered our prayers.
I think that's such a misunderstood aspect of the pro-life movement is. I think the pro-abortion movement has done a fairly good job of making us look as if, you know, we're condemning people who have been involved in abortion or who have performed abortions or who have had them, when in reality, a pretty large chunk, especially as years go by, a pretty large chunk of the pro-life movement is made up of people who've either had abortions, participated in abortions, or performed abortions. I mean, one of the greatest pro-life activists known to the movement was Dr. Bernard Nathanson, committed 40,000 abortions, including himself performing the abortion on his own girlfriend when she got pregnant. He did it himself, to becoming one of the greatest pro-life spokespersons, that the movement ever knew. So, God's mercy is endless. John Paul II writes about that beautifully in Evangelium Vitae. And, God can take that kind of pain and that kind of loss and restore people completely. And that's what he did with you, giving you your beautiful son.
Absolutely.
Who I never knew was adopted. Did you? I mean, until a couple of years ago when you guys told me. It looks just like John. Their adopted son looks exactly like them.
Yeah. Cindy has the great line about the adoption of Joseph.
Well, it goes with the whole story.
Listeners, you're going to be on your seats waiting for the story. But it does. I remember. I just always assumed he was your biological son because he looks so much like.
So this my mother thinks the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Because he really does look like daddy, and that's part of the God incidents.
Yes,
there are no accidents with our Lord.
Right.
Cindy always calls it an 18-hour pregnancy, no stretch marks.
Right, there you go. Beautiful.
Because it literally happened overnight. I mean, the 30-second version of the story. I traveled to Rome because I was invited to a Vatican sports and faith conference at the Vatican. Was on my knees praying at the tomb of John Paul II, asking for the Holy Father's intercession. We had been praying for a baby for a long time. We had been married over 2 years and no baby had come. And 10 days from the time I was on my knees in St. Peter's praying at the tomb of John Paul the Great, our son Joseph was born, unbeknownst to us. He was born in Elmhurst Hospital. The doctor that delivered the baby was the husband of my dear friend Sheila Lagminas of Relevant Radio.
No kidding.
Sheila's husband, Dr. Dale, delivered the baby.
That was an OB.
So he's born on a Sunday. 2 days later, Sheila calls me up and says, hey, John, are you guys still interested in an adoption? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Uh-huh.
18 hours later, literally, the next day, we walk out of the hospital with this beautiful little bundle of joy. And today, Joseph Dominic is 11 years old and a never-ending reminder of the sanctity of life, because his birth mother could have aborted him. He could have been one of the statistics of the 60 million unborn children that have died since Roe v. Wade. But by the grace of God, not only did she choose adoption, but she chose us as his parents.
Well, and isn't that like what it all goes back to, right? Personal stories and personal revelations that God gives to us, that every single one of us was planned, that every single one of us was valued, and that God, you know, I mean, just look at what had to be in place for that to happen, for God to put Joseph Dominic in your life, a baby that winds up looking almost identical to you.
There's no accident.
Now you're mini-me. that's a good Halloween costume for the two of you if you ever want to do that. But, you know, you just think, what had to, like, align in the universe, so to speak, you know, for that, and that's the kind of God that we have, right, and that we serve. And, you know, it reminds me of just a little bit about this. I have a friend who's a law professor who teaches at a Catholic law school and would have me once a year to teach. He does a class on an elective on social encyclicals of the church, and so he does one class hour on Evangelium Vitae, so he had me come in and teach the class. And at the end, you know, I'm taking questions, and I don't know how it came up, but something came up about adoption, and he sort of stopped the law student short and said, listen, I don't talk about this frequently, but, you know, both of my boys are adopted. And then in front of his students, he started to cry. And it was about the most uncomfortable moment I've ever... I had seen him be emotional. But he said, when I think about that one moment when their mother made that choice, the world would have never seen their faces. The world would never have known them. And then all of a sudden, it was very sweet to see, like one student raised her hand and said, you know, Professor, I have a friend who's adopted. And, you know, and it was just like, it was so awkward because they were trying to make him feel better. But many months later, I got a call from one of the students in that class. She sent me an email and said, I want to ask you a question about your lecture. And I knew before I even opened it, I thought she's pregnant. And sure enough, I was right. And so I wound up mentoring her through a pregnancy after the baby's father left her, et cetera, et cetera. So see, like, what had to align in that moment? But she draws back on when the father started to weep, and she said, I just couldn't do it. I knew after seeing his reaction and how emotional he was, I knew I couldn't do that to my own child.
Well, the combination of being post-abortive, being an adoptive father, and as a former broadcaster, a television reporter, and I also did a lot of radio along the way, I felt I had to do something in 2011. I felt compelled to do something. Mm-hmm. And so I came up with the idea of Pro-Life Champions as the name for our non-for-profit organization. And that was the very, very beginning. That was like the seed of this entire project. And little did I know that we would begin production in 2012 at the March for Life. We went to two March for Lives in Washington, D.C., to cover the march and cover the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade,
right,
and interview a myriad of national pro-life leaders and young people in the movie. And it all started in that little chapel at the Women's Center. That's where God used me and touched my heart that I should use my media background. Because, you know, when you're a reporter, you know how to tell stories. And although I had never done a pro-life documentary, I had produced previously a baseball and faith documentary called Champions of Faith Baseball Edition, which has also been seen in parishes and schools all over the United States.
Right.
And,
that's very persuasive. Yeah.
Absolutely. Without that experience of making the baseball documentary, I wouldn't have the know-how of how to take on such a difficult project like the 40 film, because honestly, it was much, much more difficult for me to produce 40 than it was to produce and narrate and write the Champions of Faith Baseball, because that was right up my alley. That was something that I knew. I knew I had relationships with many of those baseball players. I had to literally start from scratch and learn everything there was to know about the pro-life movement, about the arguments, about who the key players were, about all the different issues, of which I needed to be brought up to speed just to be able to interview, you know, the Joe Scheidlers and the Lila Roses and Abby Johnsons and all the people that we feature in the movie. So, yeah, God clearly has had a mission that I was willing to take on, and we continue on today here. You know, coming up on 46 years since Roe v. Wade, the film is still as relevant as the day that it came out on the vigil, the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe, in 2013. We honored our Blessed Mother as the patroness of the unborn here in the Chicago area at the Pickwick Theater. Over 900 people showed up for that first world premiere, something
wow.
I will never, ever forget. But our journey has continued. You know, we've shown the film all over the United States in many, many, many venues, large movie theaters from Washington, D.C. to Warner Brothers Studios in Hollywood. And it's been seen on television, on EWTN in English and Spanish.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to take a short break, and when we get back, we're going to get into your newest project. Now that we're done with 40 and you're done with your pro-life champions, you're on to a new project called Shout My Story, and we're going to get into depth and feature a couple of those stories. So, listeners, this is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Don't go away.
Father Tom Coyes invites you to the Illinois Catholic Professionals Advent Retreat Saturday, December 1st from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. James of the Sag, 10600 South Archer Avenue in Lamont. Father Bruce Wren and Dr. Lisa Fortini Campbell will have Advent reflections and an Amen Alleluia, Mass and Confession, and more. For complete details for the Advent Retreat at St. James of the Sag in Lamont, Illinois, Sunday, December 1st, visit CatholicProfessionalsIL.org. That's CatholicProfessionalsIL.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at WindsOfChangeShow.com.
Monday evening, November 26th, at 7 at St. Bernard Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois. Father Thomas J. Loya will be a presenter in a panel about the turmoil in the church, the topic, scandals, honesty, and hope. Monday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at St. Bernard Catholic Church, 13030 West 143rd Street, Homer Glen, Illinois. Sponsored by the multi-parish Respect Life Ministries of Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, St. Bernard's, St. Francis of Assisi, Our Lady of the Woods, St. Michael, and Our Lady of Good Counsel.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it is my privilege to have in studio today John and Cindy Morales of the Pro-Life Champions organization. Their movie 40 may be known to some of you. And they're on to a new project now that was in response to, as so many things in life are, something that Oprah brought up, right, Cindy? So, Cindy, tell us about your new project, Shout My Story.
Well, originally it wasn't the project Shout My Story. Originally, we just had the idea to tell beautiful stories of women who choose life in difficult circumstances. And the reason that we came up with the idea is that we met a woman who was, at the time, she was 36, and she started to tell me her story, which is this. When she was adopted, and when her mother, when she was 12, her adopted mother died. And then things happened, and when she was 16, she got pregnant. Now, I don't know if Planned Parenthood targeted her specifically, but she's the kind of young woman that they would target for an abortion, mm-hmm. because she was 16, she didn't have support, her mother had died, she was Black, you know, and I can just hear people saying, you have to have an abortion, your life will be ruined if you have a baby, you're too young, you don't have support, blah, blah, blah. Well, she chose to carry to term, and she chose to parent. So fast forward 20 years when I met her, her son was 20 years old, and he was in the armed forces, and she had his picture in her wallet, and she was very, very proud of him. And she is a stylist, and she has a successful internet clothing business, and she
wow.
also works sometimes on movie sets.
Wow.
So moral of the story, she had a baby, and her life wasn't ruined. And as I listened to her, I thought, wow.
Imagine that.
What a great story, because
yeah.
so often in the pro-life movement, we have the narrative, which is a good narrative, and we need to hear it, but this is the general narrative I was in a bad situation. I had an abortion and there was a negative impact. Now my life is, you know, awful for some reason.
Right.
Well, I wanted to flip it and say, wow, I was in that same situation. I didn't have an abortion. And here's the rest of the story years later.
Hmm.
And so we actually don't have her story on our website yet. But we will someday. But she's the inspiration for Shout My Story. So the first story that we decided to do is a story called The Story of Mary Grace. And we filmed that summer before last, because we're now in fall. So summer before last, we filmed Shout My Story of Mary Grace. And while that was in production, we ran across the website Shout Your Abortion.
Right.
And at that point, we were horrified. Hmm. Because Shout Your Abortion is a truly heinous website that changes the rhetoric of the abortion movement from abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. Abortion is a tragic necessity, but we must have it for all of these situations.
Right.
But
it's shoutyourabortion.com, listeners, if you're interested in checking out. It's something to look at for maybe for Halloween to frighten you.
It is very frightening because it says abortion is normal. These are our stories. This is not a debate.
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to normalize abortion, and they want to say abortion is a good thing.
Right.
Abortion is a positive good, rather than something that we know Bill Clinton would say it should be safe, legal, and rare.
You know, and what's particularly horrifying is, you know, we've really gone, when I first started out in the pro-life movement, and I used to, you know, debate the people from NARAL and Planned Parenthood, I used to do a lot of college campus debates, and I do less and less of those these days for whatever reason, because everyone's a snowflake now, and you can't talk about ideas that are different from what you think on campuses anymore. But if you just kind of scroll through the Shout Your Abortion website, you'll see, you know, they have, like, there's a little box, and you can click on someone's reason. So, for example, my husband and I simply wanted to be child-free. There's one reason, you know, and that really does harken back to when Planned Parenthood, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, when women would come into clinics for abortions, to their clinics. And remember, listeners, for those of you unfamiliar, Planned Parenthood has the largest network of abortion clinics of any sort of abortion, you know, industry group in the United States. So they have the most clinics. And they also keep very good statistics, which is why I tend to cite them, because they have the most clinics, they have the most women. You know, they do, I think, 30% of the country's abortions, if not more. So they tend to keep really good stats. So that's a really helpful thing to say. So they had all the women who were coming into their clinics for abortions cite the reason, like, why are you here? And you could name up to three. Number one reason, I'm afraid of how a baby will change my life. And, of course, the pro-life movement really seized on that, right, to say you shouldn't be afraid of a child. Your child can change your life in a really wonderful way, so don't be afraid of that. The other interesting thing, 50% of all the women coming to Planned Parenthood's clinics were having a repeat abortion. So they're second, third, fourth. There's no legal limit, another point of confusion among people. People think that, like, I don't know why this is, that you can only have one, like the law allows you to have one. No, you can have as many as you want. And Planned Parenthood's old numbers show now that half of all the women coming into their clinics are having a second or third or more abortion, because, you know, and why, right? That just makes logical sense, because the abortion doesn't solve any of the problems that brought the woman to the clinic in the first place, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's not going to improve her relationship with her boyfriend or her husband. If she doesn't have a job, her abortion's not going to get her a job. It's not going to help her financially. So all it does is put her back in a situation without any of those variables changed. And often women, Vicky Thorne from Project Rachel has done a lot of research on this, and her research shows that women will also try to have a replacement baby. So they'll intentionally have a repeat pregnancy because they feel so bad about the abortion. And then the woman's still in the same situation. And what does she do? She goes back to the abortion clinic.
I don't think that it's necessarily conscious. They have replacement babies, but they don't know it's a replacement baby.
Yeah, Vicky's research, you know, because it's a human, right? Like you talk about the hole in your heart, right? After your girlfriend had her abortion, John. It's a human longing, right? And of course, unless you've reconciled with the Lord, you know, you don't have the ability to move forward with your life, because you still are longing for that child.
Well, when we saw the Shout Your Abortion website, we were horrified, and we thought, well, because it came out in 2015 or 2016, we thought, well, surely someone in the pro-life movement has already answered this.
Yeah.
But we looked, and there was no response. And that's why we developed Shout My Story.
I actually spent quite a bit of time on that shoutyourabortion.com website. Looking through the numerous videos, there are dozens and dozens and dozens, upward close to 100 videos on that website of women that are bragging about their choice, about their abortion. And the one thing that really struck me as I watched some of these videos was, first of all, they were not beautifully produced at all. They were basically shot with an iPhone in a bar, in a nightclub.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean,
well, you would be sensitive.
The production values were horrible, and they were dark, and they were depressing. There was nothing inspiring, nothing uplifting about these testimonies of these women on the Shout Your Abortion website. So, our idea, once Cindy came up with the ShoutMyStory.org idea, which is our website, ShoutMyStory.org, we wanted to do something beautiful and inspiring and highly well-produced videos that will motivate and inspire people about the beauty of choosing life despite the most gut-wrenching and difficult of situations. And that was the genesis of Shout My Story.
You know, it's interesting. I'll have to ask Vicki Thorne about some of the stories that are on this Shout Your Abortion website, because it would be interesting to see, like, the analysis of some of the ways in which women are speaking about, you know, and, you know, for example, my husband and I just wanted to be child-free. That's mm-hmm. an actual topic. The best decision of my life, you know. I had an abortion on September 11th. Now, there's one. And if those of you who don't remember, in the wake of 9/11, Planned Parenthood, their contribution, right, to the healing of the city was to offer free abortions for anybody in New York City or in Washington, D.C. who had gotten pregnant. So, that was their contribution. So I went from the fertility clinic to abortion. I mean, it's
unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, two other things. One, Oprah Winfrey this past summer actually endorsed Shout Your Abortion. She endorsed the movement in her O magazine in the July issue. There's an entire segment of the magazine dedicated to promoting Shout Your Abortion. I just found that just remarkable that somebody with such a powerful voice in our world like Oprah Winfrey would feel compelled to promote this movement. Then the other thing that really hit home, and it's coming up in just a few days, On November 1st, on All Saints Day, Shout Your Abortion is coming out with a 256-page paperback coffee table book, they're calling it, with hundreds of testimonies and photos to basically glorify and brag a woman's right to choose and what they see as something very positive and normal. And so this is why we're on a mission to counter that type of mentality, because young people are being evangelized from the pro-abortion movement. They're being evangelized by Planned Parenthood or by movements like Shout Your Abortion. But I believe that the good news is that the tide is turning in our country towards the culture of life because for a variety of different reasons. But one of them is that Planned Parenthood is being exposed.
Right.
Thanks to the work of organizations like Live Action and Lila Rose and the great work that they're doing and the undercover videos.
David Dalyden.
Yep. Planned Parenthood. The Gosnell movie.
Right.
Yes, of course there's pushback. And this is still a very hot button issue here. Coming up on 46 years after Roe. And obviously the entire Supreme Court justice debate, the bottom line
was
abortion.
It wasn't about
Justice Kavanaugh. It was about
at
abortion.
At the bottom of it, that's what it was. And I was at a talk. Illinois Right to Life had their big action fund, PAC fund dinner on Saturday night, and George Mason Law Professor Helen Alvarez gave the keynote and was simply talking about the opportunities that this newly reconstituted court is going to provide for us. There's now kind of akin to your Shout Your Story, and I want to, we're going to spend the whole time not even talking about this. We have to get to the Shout Your Story.
There.
I know, once we get started, it's like, wait, come back. But there's an Indiana case that it looks like the Supreme Court's going to grant certiorari, which is a very fancy lawyer way of saying they're going to hear this case, because Indiana has passed a law that bans abortion in cases of sex selection, which are most often done on baby girls because a couple wants a boy and not a girl. Sex selection abortions for Down syndrome, mm-hmm. and abortions for race. So race-based, sex selection-based, or Down syndrome-based abortions were banned. And so Planned Parenthood, of course, has, and the ACLU have have countered this and sued to have the law repealed. And so it looks like the court may grant cert in this case. And that would be a very good first kind of chink in the armor, wouldn't it? Because you look like the terrible person you are if you're defending someone having a sex selection abortion, in my opinion.
It sounds like a very positive step. And the reality is that most people who rely on the New York Times or the USA Today or the mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, they're never going to hear the truth of what's going on in the pro-life movement.
Right.
They're never going to hear that at the state level there were 50-plus pro-life laws last year in 2017 alone, and well over 400 pro-life laws at the state level over the last 6 years to save babies' lives. You never hear any of that.
No.
It never comes out.
No. Well, but thanks to the two of you, stories like this are coming out. So why don't we start, Cindy, I know our producer Nick has a couple of video clips that you've sent to us in audio so that we can, let's talk to me a little bit about, you've got a couple of these different Shout My Story stories done now, and one involves a prenatal miracle story, really, of a very premature baby named Thomas. And why don't you kind of set up the clip so that Nick can play it for our listeners?
Well, one of our friends said, you got to talk to these people. They had a baby that was born, one of the youngest babies ever to be born and survive.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 hours before he was born, the doctor was recommending abortion.
Right.
So that's why he's in a Shout My Story. And then he also has a remarkable story of his own.
Right. Well, Nick, can you play that clip?
Hi, I'm Deborah Fiorito.
I'm Dan Fiorito.
We're the parents of 9 beautiful children. Our youngest baby, Thomas, was born at only 22 weeks. And despite all the odds, he's perfectly healthy.
This is a great place you can share your story. I'd encourage you to go to shoutmystory.org and tell your story about your little baby.
That's shoutmystory.org. Thank you so much.
That's wonderfully dramatic music. If that doesn't get you inspired to go onto that website and look up some of the stories that people have shared. And, you know, I think that these good news stories get less told, right, than the horrible, you know, my baby's going to be born with some kind of terrible disability. I did an article for National Review a couple of years ago on something I feel very passionately about and that I'm hoping to continue work on, and that's perinatal hospice. So when women are given adverse prenatal diagnoses, instead of being presented abortion as a first option, as baby Thomas's parents were, instead, you know, the NICU doctors in conjunction with the OBs and whatever kind of pastoral care staff present the option of perinatal hospice, which is just like hospice for a born person, except it's hospice for the unborn person. It helps to prepare the family, right? It helps, you know, if the child's going to live 6 hours or 60 days, it prepares the family. It gives them an opportunity to have the child baptized if they're Christians, to have pictures, to have the grandparents meet with, you know, the baby and to be able to hold them, to have mementos of that child, to do those sorts of, you know, loving human things that you would do for any sick child. I was very much sensitized to this because I had a friend who was carrying twins and who was diagnosed with a really rare form of anencephaly. It's not exactly anencephaly because her child had her entire brain intact, but the entire brain had formed outside of her skull. Her skull had not fused, closed. And the little girl, whom they named Mary Bernadette, had a twin brother named Will, and Will was completely healthy. And the way the abortion doctor, or the doctor who was pro-abortion at the hospital that they were being seen at, tried to frighten her parents into saying, you know, you're jeopardizing the health of this other little guy by carrying this baby to term. But Jeannie just would not be deterred. She went and did some research on her own and discovered that there's a tremendous shortage of infant organs in the United States because so many children with disabilities who might be potential organ donors are aborted and not given a chance at life. And so they began to look into that as an alternative. They wanted their daughter to be healed. They prayed for that. They prayed for that miracle. But she was born. She lived 6 hours. She died in her father's arms, not at the other end of an abortion instrument. She had been baptized. Every one of her grandparents had held her and sang to her, and they had pictures. She had a very peaceful passing. Then the day of her funeral, 2 days later, they came home, and there was a letter from the Illinois Oregon Registry donation group telling them the names of the two little babies whose heart valves their daughter had donated to, who would have died had they not had those heart valves. So, you know, she said, was it painful? Yeah, but she said, I've not lost a night's sleep over my daughter. My daughter gave life to two other children who would not be here. We held her. We did everything possible. We loved her for the short time we had her, and we know we're going to see her again in heaven. You know, so perinatal hospice is something that, like, I love to, and I'll have to introduce you to her so you can include her story as well.
That would be awesome, yes. Because the first story we did was the story of Mary Grace.
Right.
And actually, it wasn't our intention to have a lot of stories about children who are born and then die, but we've ended up having quite a few of those. Yeah. It seems to be, and one of the things that really, really bothers me is that doctors, they don't just mildly suggest right. abortion as right. a potential alternative to what is obviously a very difficult situation when you're facing a grim diagnosis for your baby.
Right.
They push it.
Oh, yeah.
They tell
yeah.
you if you don't want to have an abortion, you can go find another doctor. Or they, if yep. they don't say that in so many words, they say it.
Oh, I had a friend that happened to. The doctor shut the door of the room. And he said, if you don't do this, you go home and make out your will because you're going to leave your children, you're going to leave your husband a widower, and you're going to leave your children motherless. Okay. And she, you know, she had a very severe lung condition. This was nothing to fool around with. She's perfectly healthy. She's a singer. She had a beautiful little baby girl. You know, sometimes their predictions are not as dire. I've been on the other end of that. You know, I had the same condition St. Gianna Bretomola had with my first pregnancy. And, you know, I just remember at one point having to say to the doctor, if you say abortion to me one more time, I'm gonna leave this hospital and go someplace else. I said, just put crazy religious nut on my chart if you have to. Just stop talking about this because I'm not gonna do it. So can move on to Plan B. And then guess what? We moved on to Plan B. And my daughter's perfectly fine, and you know.
And those are exactly the kind of stories that we're trying to tell with Shout My Story at shoutmystory.org. In the Baby Thomas video. Towards the end of the video, we absolutely hit home very strongly that whole idea of don't let a doctor tell you what to do.
Right.
Because many parents...
Or at a minimum, right? I mean, you can't completely discount what your doctor... Obviously, you know, they're the doctor. But, you know, look for a second opinion.
Exactly.
Ask for other... If the particular doctor who's advising you has no experience in neonatal care, ask to see a neonatal specialist. Go to another hospital for a second. You can remember, you're the consumer. Think of it that way. You're the consumer, and you have a right to know, you know, what other options might be available. You know, you have a right to full and complete information, you know, not somebody pearl clutching and giving you the worst possible case scenario. You know, and just as a lawyer, I think, frankly, if you want to know my honest opinion on this, I think these are lawsuit motivated predictions. You know, the doctor's thinking there's going to be, you know, a disabled child born and I'm going to get blamed for saying that I didn't adequately warn, you know, these parents that this was a possible outcome. So I think a lot of it is motivated by the doctor's fear of being sued, frankly.
I think that's a very good possibility, but they don't need to push it so hard. All they really need to do to protect themselves is to suggest it as an alternative, but they could soften that suggestion with other things like perinatal hospice, which
right.
probably never even comes up.
Oh, we're going to break now. So, Cindy, when we come back, hold on to that thought. We're going to get back. We're going to talk more about the Baby Thomas story, about the Mary Grace story, and about where you go from here with shoutmystory.org. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Do you know what the Christmas spirit is? Some say the Christmas spirit is a feeling of love, joy, and peace that comes this time each year. You know, it's not a bad answer. It's just incomplete. The Christmas spirit is the living presence of the third member of the Trinity, the Holy Spirit, actively animating and perfecting the lives of Christians. In fact, the love, joy, and peace that we associate with the Christmas spirit are what St. Paul calls the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Many wish the Christmas spirit could be with us all year round. Well, I've got news for you. It can. Why do you think I'm so jolly? So even long after the Christmas decorations are stored away, our hearts can be filled 365 days with the same love, joy, and peace that the angels proclaim to the shepherds. if we are open to the power of the Holy Spirit, the true Christmas spirit. For Christ is born, glorified.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to Christmas on the Prairie. Come and hear the story of the real St. Nicholas and take a ride with him in his own horse-drawn carriage.
Saturday evening, December 1st, from 2 to 6 p.m., an indoor and outdoor family event. Experience the beauty of a Byzantine church, and homemade Christmas bake sale items are available. Christmas on the Prairie at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Saturday, December 1st, from 2 to 6 p.m.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24-7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hello, welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on WNDZ AM 750. And you were kind enough, Cindy and John, to bring in a couple of different clips of the video. Would it be possible to play that second clip now, and then we're going to discuss a little bit about the story behind the news clip you're about to hear, listeners?
I could feel little arms and little legs, and he was amazing. He was breathing on his own. They had a little difficulty time intubating him, but I looked up and then I saw Dan, and tears were just streaming down his face. It was, I didn't know if the baby, is because the baby, because Thomas wasn't living, or because no. They were successful in the intubation, and he was 1 pound, 2 ounces. I've never even seen a baby that was 1 pound, 2 ounces. He was the tiniest thing.
So emotionally, I went from not knowing if my son was alive to knowing that he came out fighting, and it was awesome.
Well, that's a very moving clip. Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind that then, Cindy?
Well, Tom...
it's sort of self-explanatory, yeah, but fill in a little bit more.
Yeah, to get the full story, go to www.shoutmystory.org and see the 7 minute and 51 second video.
Right, so there's all of these clips. This is all available online at shoutmystory.org.
Shoutmystory.org.
You can see the story of baby Thomas and baby Mary Grace. And you know what's wonderful about this? This is a great resource for other people who are facing difficult pregnancies and who think because you think you're alone when you're going through this. You think, gosh, I have to, for whatever reason, you think I couldn't possibly be the only person going through this. But then it's very hard to find, isn't it? Places that are resources for women who have gone through similar things.
Right, and it isn't just difficult pregnancies, it's difficult situations. So, for example, there's one story on there of a woman who was very young. We interviewed her at the March for Life. She was 19, I think, and she was going to go to the abortion clinic and have an abortion.
Right.
But before her procedure, she actually ran into a friend who was a pro-life activist, and she was a save as a result of that sidewalk. Yes,
yeah.
A sidewalk. And so her baby, when we interviewed her, was 4 months old, and then a few months ago, she emailed me to say that her boyfriend, they're not married, but her boyfriend and she had decided to become pro-life activists and speakers to speak out against abortion, to help encourage girls in her particular situation. She felt, basically she didn't have the money to have a baby. She was 19 years old. So now she's so happy she had that baby. That baby is the joy of her life, and she is going to become a pro-life speaker, and she'll be featured in one of our future newsletters because I'm so excited. We're in contact.
Well, the interesting thing about all this and like the secular media, CBS News did a big feature on the world's smallest surviving babies. Where are they now? And, the hospital where baby Thomas was born you know, has one of the most renowned neonatal intensive care units in the country. And in fact, that's the world's smallest baby, whose baby, you can Google this, Rumisa is her name, R-U-M-I-S-A, was born in 2004 at Loyola weighing 9.2 ounces.
Oh,
so
that's
she
amazing.
wasn't even a pound. And then Madeline Mann, who is at Loyola's other sort of, I think she's the second smallest, is Madeline Mann, who was 9.6 ounces or something like that. And so she was 9.9 ounces, and she had Blaine breeding and, you know, all these other sorts of disabilities. But she just graduated from Loyola University. She's a 22-year-old honors student in psychology at Loyola 22 years ago. So Loyola had, I have to give a shout-out to Loyola because my own daughter was treated there, one of the best neonatal units, you know, in the country.
And I think Thomas had a little bit of a head up because even though he was 22 weeks and 0 days, which is very, very young, he was a little bigger. He was 1 pound, 2 ounces.
Yeah, he weighed a little more.
And
yeah.
Maybe those extra 3 ounces helped him.
Yeah. And my understanding, too, is that, you know, his mother had been fighting a virus, and what that did, you know, is to force the baby's lungs to develop a little more quickly. So the virus had caused an immune response in the mom, you know, to get the baby ready more quickly because the mom was sick. You know, the antibiotics were, you know, antibodies, rather, in the baby. So that is another factor that can help lungs mature more quickly. Because with what, you know, when my daughter was in the NICU, the thing they always told us was, listen, it's not the birth weight. Don't worry about the birth weight. It's the lung maturity.
Yeah.
That's the key. And boys' lungs mature more slowly than girls do. So that's why the two smallest surviving, this Madeline Mann and this Rumisa girl, are both, you know, they're both girls because their lungs were. But if you can be, you know, you're in a place where they can intubate, the baby's born breathing on their own, those babies, if you look at the studies in the New England Journal of Medicine, have much better outcomes, you know. And that's why, like, one of the troubling things, you know, you told me that Dan and Deborah, the couple featured in your film, you know, were told it's a 1 in a million odds. And if you talk to I have a friend who's a neonatologist at Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago, and she said, you know, we never tell parents that. I mean, unless you're trying to frighten someone and get them to have an abortion, there's another kind of subtle way, right? You know, and she pointed me to the Eunice Kennedy Shriver. Eunice Shriver, she's the one Kennedy who remained staunchly pro-life. She gave money to pro-life charities. And with her influence, she opened the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute on Child Health and Human Development. But one of its like subspecialties there is neonatal research. And that's one of the big things she wanted to focus on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's like a calculator you can use to see, you know, the overall chances of survival. But they're very clear. They say users should keep in mind, including doctors, that every infant is an individual and that factors beyond the ones that doctors initially use to calculate standardized assessments may influence an infant's outcome. So basically, don't just say that because it's this week's and this time and this, that, you know, your chance of survival is only X. Every infant's an individual, and you've got to treat them individually. So it doesn't mean, this is not an excuse not to treat, right?
And that's really good to keep in mind for doctors. And no, we're not doctors, but I've been seeing a lot on Facebook of babies that were born at, like, 23 weeks and 6 days, or
right.
23 weeks and 1 day, and the arbitrary cutoff is 24 weeks. So if you're under 24 weeks in some hospitals, they just don't treat the baby,
yeah.
And the baby dies. And I think that you gave me an article from the New England Journal of Medicine that
right.
essentially said, if you're lucky enough to be born in a hospital with a good NICU, your survival is a lot more guaranteed than
and then the other factor, yeah. I have a good friend who's a pediatric anesthesiologist at a non-Catholic hospital here in the city of Chicago, and she told me the other factor that they look at, she just did surgery, this is very cool, on a 24-weeker who had been born at 22 weeks, and they wanted to do, she had, there's a particular condition that a lot of preemies had that she had to have surgery for, and she said, I told them, she didn't want to do the surgery until the baby was at a certain weight and 24 weeks, but she said, you know, when she assists, first of all, at surgeries that are done while the baby is still in utero, and that is a possibility and done every day in good hospitals, you know, they can actually do some surgical things while the baby's still in utero. She said, my team for the baby is separate from the mom's team, A. B, I give this the fetus, at that point, that's what they would call them in this hospital mm-hmm. medically, gets an intramuscular shot of fentanyl before that anybody touches even the mother. That baby is anesthetized. And you just think about the babies that are aborted at 24, 25, 26 weeks, like in the Gosnell Clinic, no anesthesia whatsoever, right? So that's a horrifying thing for me to even contemplate. But mm-hmm. but the one point, Jack, she said that in her hospital, at least, if they are not breathing on their own, pre-23 weeks, they do not intervene. At 23 weeks, if they're not breathing on their own, they will intubate. And at 24 weeks, there's always care given, but they'll intubate, but then only with comfort care. And then at 24 weeks, you know, but it depends, you know, on the, some parents. She said she had a baby that she's quite certain she could have saved, but she said the parents didn't want to intervene. The parents said no, mm-hmm. and they were twins, and they both died. Mm-hmm. The parents said just comfort care. They wanted no intervention. She said that was a really heartbreaking delivery for her to assist at.
Mary, you mentioned the Gosnell movie, and, you know, we featured a short segment on Gosnell in the 40 film. So I was extremely interested in seeing the actual Gosnell movie, which right. I got to see the opening weekend. And I'll tell you, after having interviewed Dan and Deborah about their beautiful miracle child, baby Thomas, and having met baby Thomas in person, mm-hmm. and the little guy is riding his little tricycle, his little tricycle, he's slapping me five.
Yeah.
Just such a beautiful little guy. And to think that he was smaller than the babies that Gosnell was
yep.
killing
oh,
in
yeah.
his House of Horrors yeah. clinic in Philadelphia.
Significantly smaller.
Exactly.
He was doing 26 weeks.
Some of those kids'
and, yeah.
babies were 25, 26 weeks.
Well,
and
yeah.
I sat in that theater, and Mary, I kid you not, I wept.
Yeah.
All I could think of was baby Thomas.
Yeah.
I couldn't control the tears watching that movie on a Sunday night, that opening weekend here in the Chicago area, because it really, really hit home. I mean, we're talking about babies like baby Thomas.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. If you've spent any time in a NICU, you know, I did for 3 weeks. My youngest daughter was not so much born prematurely, but was diagnosed with a lung condition in utero that required a very early delivery, much earlier than I was sitting there looking at my watch thinking, I got to get to Target. And they're doing a couple more ultrasounds. And the doctor came in with the head of the high risk unit, which is never a good sign. I know he wasn't coming in to say hello to me. And they said, you know, there's something on your ultrasound. And I just became hysterical. I didn't even listen to what they were saying. And then the ultrasound technician's trying to go, no, look, the head's fine. The spine is fine. But her lung, you know, her duct and her lung had burst in both lungs. And so they said, you know, sorry, you're going to have a baby. You're not going to Target. So anyway, I can laugh about it now. At the time, it was not funny. Well, listen, we're going to take our final quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to hear a little bit more about the baby Thomas story, the baby Mary Grace story, and then how people can help you if they want to make sure that more of these stories get out there and get heard. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony. Don't go away.
Father Tom Coyes invites you to the Illinois Catholic Professionals Advent Retreat Saturday, December 1st from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. James of the Sag, 10600 South Archer Avenue in Lamont. Father Bruce Wren and Dr. Lisa Fortini-Campbell will have Advent reflections and an Amen Alleluia, Mass and Confession, and more. For complete details for the Advent Retreat at St. James of the Sag in Lamont, Illinois, Sunday, December 1st, visit CatholicProfessionalsIL.org. That's CatholicProfessionalsIL.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. Don't forget Winds of Change in your charitable giving as we approach the year's end. But another place you need to think about for your charitable giving is shoutmystory.org. John and Cindy Morales' fine work trying to bring to light and to make the public aware of the stories of different people, different women, families facing adverse pregnancies and how they coped with them in a way that respected the life of both the mother and the child. So you have now a third clip for us, I think that we're going to get to in a moment. But set this clip off for us. What's this third clip about? Okay, so this is going to take us, I think, a little bit further into the baby Thomas story. Listeners, for those of you just tuning in or joining us, Thomas was born at 22 weeks gestation, which is what they would call, you know, kind of on the cusp of viability. There's a bunch of different stories out there. Studies for these what they call micro preemies. The major medical journals in the country all follow these micro preemie stories, and so the New England Journal of Medicine, through this Eunice Kennedy Shriver Institute for Neonatal Health, tracked between, I think it was 2004 and 2011. So again, quite a while ago, 4,000 different babies who were born before 27 weeks, including 9 born between 21 and 2 weeks, all who survived without disability. So, Nick, can you play that clip for us, and then we'll get a little
Don't let anyone tell you what is viable and not viable. Thomas came into the world. I had never even heard of a baby being born at 22 weeks, and not only did he come into the world, but he's perfect. He's wonderful.
I have a lot of friends who have had children, you know, if you're past a certain age, you know, now it's ultrasound after ultrasound, and they scare the heck out of the moms and dads. And if there's any hint of any issues, it's sad how many doctors would say, you know, perhaps you should terminate because there may be issues. And I could count dozens of stories of people I know who were told they should consider terminating the pregnancy, and their kids are perfectly healthy. And if they weren't perfectly healthy, they still would be a perfect little baby. You know, choose life. Don't fall in with the culture of death that's out there, and fight for what you know is right. Fight for your child.
Yeah, and that can't be said better. Fight for your child. You have to remember this is your child, and don't let a doctor's, you know, viewpoints or hysteria come between you and your child and your love for your child. And again, even if your child is going to have special needs, is going to need special help in some way, it's still your child. It's still your child. And the resources that are available to families of children with special needs are tremendous, especially in this day and age, right, when we want to include diversity, including diversity of abilities in our community. So say a little bit more about what we just listened to, Cindy, and how people can help you now to tell more stories and to continue your good work.
Okay, the one thing that I think the Baby Thomas story points out more than anything is that the viability needle has moved. So, you know, a while back, it was 28 weeks. Then it was 24 weeks. Now, baby Thomas was born at 22 weeks. There were other babies born between 21 and 22 weeks. And your viability, for someone to say, well, a person isn't a person until they're viable, makes your personhood dependent on technology rather than something intrinsic to the human person.
Correct, right.
And that's stupid.
have you seen, there's a very funny new video, set of videos out from this woman in Canada, and it's called Choice for Two.
Yes.
As you say, so she talks about the magic birth canal and how somehow when the baby passes through the magic birth canal at the other end, they're a person, they have value, they're wonderful. Oh, because they just point out the absolute illogic of the pro-choice position and of our laws, frankly. You know, not a person, a person, not a person, a person. I mean, you know,
exactly.
1 inch in the birth canal, you know.
So what we want to do with baby Thomas and what the Fiorito family, they believe strongly that baby Thomas was brought into the world for a purpose. And that purpose is to show people the intrinsic value of the human person at all stages of life from the moment of conception on. And so what we would really like to do is help bring them to Washington at the March for Life and visit Congress and get on some different radio and TV programs and just get it out there.
Right.
His story to influential people in Congress.
The most moving speech at the March for Life last year was Jamie Herrera Butler's. She's the congresswoman from California whose daughter was diagnosed with Potter syndrome, which means she had no kidneys. She was given zero chance of survival. Zero. And she put out a plea on Facebook. I was one of the people that was on her prayer team praying for her. She had one doctor from Johns Hopkins who saw her post who said, I've never tried this before. I think if we inject you with a certain kind of fluid that will mimic what the kidneys do, then I think we can get her to term. She said, I am willing to try. Long story short, she's now not the only baby with Potter syndrome to be born and is a happy, healthy five-year-old. She's one of many. She was just the first because she took that chance. So this hour has gone by way too fast. Shoutmystory.org.
Right. If you have a story to shout, we do want to hear from you, too.
Yes.
Facebook, Twitter, we have a YouTube channel. We have thousands and thousands of views on social media. So we understand the beauty and the power of telling stories to inspire and to educate and to motivate people about the culture of life.
And listeners, if you've not done anything yet for Respect Life Month, go to their website and share one or two of their stories. Make other people aware that every life is a gift. Thank you for joining us. This has been Mary Fiorito today for Father Anthony here on AM 750 WNDV.
We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred.